Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:02 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 20th, and the inauguration of President Biden has passed off without remark. Of course, that's certainly been helped by 20,000 troops sitting in to guard the Capitol building, because there had been obviously the threat of some form of further insurgency. But the market has generally breathed a sigh of relief. So the stock market was in positive territory. Gold, however, was up $30. It's certainly now confirming support, at least in the near term, in the region of $1,800. And this was a positive day overall. We've certainly seen that since the presidential election, that Chinese shares in particular have been rallying. Now, there are two different ways of thinking about this. One might be that they're breathing a sigh of relief too, that the rather capricious way in which the Trump administration has been deploying its China strategy might give way to at least a more predictable rules-based way of combating China's ascent. And at least if it's predictable, then companies have a way of dealing with it. That might be one reason why China is doing better. It might also be because we're heading towards the Chinese New Year, and traditionally stocks do rally into the Chinese New Year. And it's in the first week of February, so some enthusiasm for Chinese stocks, particularly among domestic investors, around this time of the year is not at all unusual. But then when we think about what else is going on, well, the European Union is talking increasingly about yield curve control. They'd love to be able to do what Japan does and simply target one bond yield. Of course, Europe doesn't have that luxury because they have got lots of different bond yields that they have to target. So instead, what they're probably going to do is try and target spreads. And that's something that is obviously going to require a great deal of money. When we think about the spread, for example, of Italian debt over German bonds. Well, the Conte government has survived, so that's removed a source of potential volatility. But if we look at the chart here, we don't have really any evidence that there was any volatility, and spreads are right back around the 100 basis point level, which was where the rate was all the way back in 2012 and 16, but of course interest rates are lower now than they were then. We're in negative territory overall for short-term interest rates in Europe, and they are very cognizant of the fact that there is no government really can tolerate higher borrowing costs. When we then think about what's going on in Japan, well, the Japanese yen has been trending higher against the dollar since 2015. Now we're coming back towards this 100 level, and every time we've come even close to that area over the course of the last 5 years, then the Bank of Japan has intervened. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the JGB, the yield is rising. It's up to 4 basis points. Of course, the Bank of Japan has also said that they're going to defend the 10 basis point level. So that would suggest that as yields rise, we're only becoming coming closer to the time when the Bank of Japan will intervene. So this is another country that is likely to intervene to arrest the advance in yields, which amounts to printing more money to buy those bonds. And of course, if they're going to print more money to buy the bonds, it should then also have a negative effect on the currency. Then the Australians have also engaged in yield curve control, and they're targeting a 10 basis point level on the 3-year as well. So this 10 basis point level definitely tends to attract some interest. Now, of course, we come to the point of what exactly are the plans that the U.S. government has. Well, the Biden administration is expected to run another significant deficit, and they are planning to print, or they're planning to borrow at least a trillion more than the Federal Reserve has said that they're going to buy. So that obviously raises some important questions. The most important of which, of course, is who is going to buy those bonds. And as we think about the trend in the 10-year government bond yield, well, it's still holding around this 1.07% level. So investors are leery of giving too much credence in the short term to the potential that the Biden administration will in fact have the capability to spend as much money as they want. And that's why bond yields are tightening up a little in the short term. But the reality is there is no plan by any administration anywhere to contain government deficits in 2021. So there's the clear scope here that we're going to see continued spending. And that is particularly negative for the US dollar. So the Bloomberg dollar index was in negative territory in here today. I think it's important to contrast the performance of this index with the regular dollar index, because the weightings are quite different. When we think about the weighting of the euro in particular for the dollar index, it's in the region of approximately 50%. When we then think about and it used to have it on the description page. I know that the Bloomberg one definitely has the weightings on the description page, and the weighting for the euro is only about 32%. It also has a significantly larger number of currencies, and it gives bigger weightings to the Chinese renminbi, to the Indian rupee, to the Korean won, then also the Mexican peso. So it's much more influenced by the big global currencies, and then it's weighted by the share of international trade and their FX liquidity. So that, I think, is a more appropriate way of looking at the devaluation of the dollar that is underway. The important point is that if we look at the longer term chart, well, then it did move to a new high in 2020. So depending on which one of these indices one were to pay attention to, well, there's the scope, at least, that the dollar could be trending down for a while, and it has clear potential that it could break down to new lows before the end of this bear market in the dollar. This, of course, is a big consideration. We've been living in a period of deflationary forces for an awfully long time. Part of the reason for that was because of globalization and the offshoring of jobs and manufacturing capacity to lower cost areas, which compressed the cost of consumer goods. It also kept a lid on wage demands because of the influx of lower cost goods, as well as the hole it put in the middle class. Then we can think about the other factors like demographics. So in the developed world, then demographics have been deteriorating. Well, one thing that we can anticipate from the first 100 days of the Biden administration is that they are going to do something to reform immigration. And that is going to give credit to approximately 11 million people. A lot of these people have already been paying Social Security and taxes. They do have Social Security numbers. In California, it's possible for illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses. In fact, I was able to get one of those illegal immigrant driver's licenses because in between the time when my original visa expired and my green card was granted, I was technically an illegal immigrant. I couldn't leave the country. But I did still need to have a valid driver's license. So certainly these kinds of programs, they tend to get panned a lot by some commentators, but they definitely come in handy at other times. And the reality is that illegal immigrants have come in handy for an awfully long time because they do pay taxes, but they don't generally tend to benefit from social programs. And that was most particularly true in 2020, where it was absolutely obvious that the beneficiaries of the government's largesse were citizens, whereas the illegal immigrant population didn't benefit practically at all. They certainly weren't getting the unemployment benefits. They weren't getting the stimulus checks either. And we're talking about millions of people. And that was particularly true, or came to my attention at least, from talking to friends that have got manufacturing capacity, that their customers in majority black neighborhoods were doing fantastically well and were ordering more than they normally would, but that their customers in Latino neighborhoods were collapsing. So that was very clear that the burden for really dealing with the lockdowns was falling on the illegal immigrant population, and we're talking about millions of people. So by granting those people citizenship, regardless of whether one agrees with it or not, what it is going to create is a massive new source of credit demand, because they will now have opportunities for banking, and to a greater or lesser extent, what one also notices is that the majority of pawn offices tend to be in immigrant neighborhoods, because they're not able to have the same access to banking facilities as other parts of society. Well, the one thing that has been missing from the inflation formula over the course of the last decade has been a credit multiplier. So when we then think about what the impact is of giving banking facilities to millions of people, then it is one of the missing ingredients in creating an inflationary force. Now, when we think about companies like Synchrony Financial, it's a consumer finance company. It used to be GE Capital, which it really was the crown jewel of the GE empire, and they sold it off. Now, it moved to a new high in here this week. Now, it's very overbought in the short term, and I think it's probably a better representation of what's going on in consumer finance than some of the other banks, but the banking sector is also rather overbought in the short term and potentially now also consolidating. When we think about the diversified financials, well, their profitability has been very sharply skewed by the performance of their trading operations over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. So that index is pushing on to new highs, and Morgan Stanley, for example, announced really quite impressive results in here today. Now, when we then think about another country where immigration could potentially have benefits, it's Japan. And they have been bringing in more immigrants over the course of the last decade. It's still a trickle relative to the number of people that are migrating across the border into the USA. But the stock market there has broken out. As we think about more young people finding their way to Japan, then there is the potential that it will start to kick off a domestic demand story. We had the beginnings of that starting to come through before the pandemic. But the reality is that a younger population is going to be even more needed in the aftermath of the pandemic, not least because there will be people that definitely will need to be cared for. And it will, in many respects, and this is, I think, something that is potentially underappreciated, is it could easily accelerate the retirement of the baby boomer generation. And that's true in a large number of countries, that there are a lot of people who will have given up work, particularly in the late 50s or the mid-50s through to retirement age bracket. And they'll be thinking that they rather like the not having the pressure of having to get up and go to work every day. So there is the potential that there will be a lot more positions that will need to be filled as we move back into a more reflationary environment. And of course, if there are more positions to be filled and a dearth of people to fill them, that will also put upward pressure on wages. So as we think about what is likely, well, I think pieces are falling into place for inflationary pressures to rise. And that brings us back to gold, because even though the gold price has been contracting now for 5 months, it's working on an upside key reversal in dollar terms in here this week. Now, of course, we can also just remind ourselves that the size of the downward dynamics within this downtrend have been much larger than the upward dynamics, and we definitely need to see that sequence of lower rally highs broken. But this is potentially a higher reaction low from the region of the trend mean and that psychological $1,800 level which had offered support all the way back in 2011 and 2013. Silver prices continue to outperform. They have not pulled all the way back into the range and firmed pretty impressively in here today. So this continues to look like a first step above the base. And platinum has only just begun to break out. And it continues to hold this move above the $1,000 level. So this also continues to look like a bullish environment overall. Palladium prices are failing to continue to lead their way higher. There is the clear scope that with platinum recovering, that it'll be more difficult for palladium to continue higher. And we may see that people do start to trade that ratio between the two. Platinum is at such an incredible discount to all of the other precious metals on an historical basis that it has clear scope to outperform, and most particularly against palladium, where we've seen just an incredible, it's lost 90% of its value since 2009 relative to palladium, which is really just quite incredible. Then when we think about where demand stories are likely to manifest themselves, copper, I continue to think, is back in a secular bull market environment. When we think about the fact that it's been labeled as Dr. Copper for an awfully long time because it's been influenced by the key factors that generate global economic growth. But what we're increasingly seeing is that with the rollout of energy, or renewable energy, that copper demand is being created in the transportation sector, but it's also being created in the renewable energy sector. So on the one hand, we used to have it in infrastructure and communications. Now we're also having it in transport and utilities. So the potential use cases for copper continue to increase, but we don't have the same ability to increase the supply of the metal. So there is likely to be a supply inelasticity meets rising demand environment for copper for the foreseeable future. And of course, that is assuming that there is continued outperformance and demand for electric vehicles. Tesla was off its lows in here today, and it continues and to hold a sequence of higher reaction lows, and it remains still in this clear uptrend. It's got more competition in the pipeline, and there is significant innovation going on in the battery sector. One thing that is really beneficial from the perspective of the global economy is that regardless of what happens in terms of the shares and the competition for investment dollars, the innovation that's going on and the continued advances and productivity growth that's coming through from the battery sector will benefit all of society over the medium term. Of course, when we then think about how are people investing, well, the ARK family of ETFs continue to attract a great deal of interest, and the innovation ETF continues to accelerate higher. One thing that it is also starting to do is that any time, and one of the things that ARK does, which is very transparent, and of course it also helps to stoke interest in various sectors, is that at the end of every day they send out a summary of the shares they've bought and sold for their ETFs on a daily basis for their re-weightings. So one of the ones that's been popping up has been at 3D Systems. Well, 3D printing had a phenomenal bull market in 2012 and 2013. Most of the companies didn't make any money, and they were all really bought out by 3D Systems and Stratasys and the X1. When we think about what that did to those companies, they went through an enormously painful period of trying to consolidate all of those different technologies that were birthed in 2012 and 2013. They gave up all of their advances, and they've been in these base formations for a long time, and they were really in need of a bullish catalyst. Well, I'm not at all sure that the technology has improved. I haven't seen anything to say that they've solved some of the issues that 3D printing has. The key benefits for the sector are that additive manufacturing tends to have fewer imperfections. So for precision engineering, then it's really very useful. And there have certainly been innovations in 3D printing metals. So obviously that is certainly something that is a key engineering benefit. However, the key thing that 3D printing has not yet seemed to solve is the speed of manufacturing, and the fact that you need an individual new machine for each product that you want to make. So if you want to make 10 products, you've got to either use one machine to make all 10, one after another. So it doesn't lend itself to the kind of mass manufacturing and replaceable products way of manufacturing that has been classic in terms of the speed of manufacturing that other sectors have been able to achieve. Well, perhaps they can solve that through economies of scale and simply producing more machines. But the big point here is that with interest in technology and innovation increasing, and ETFs attempting to target these emerging sectors, which have very small numbers of potential ways of investing, then it's acting as a catalyst to drive them up and out of their ranges. And the three main companies have all started to rally. So they're completing their base formations. It's not simply that we're getting these significant moves higher in the 3D printing companies, but also in sewing machines, which are highly automated. Shimoseki did fantastically well in 2016 through to the beginning of 2018, gave up more than the entire advance, but now it is breaking out to new recovery highs. So we're certainly starting to see base formations being completed in isolated parts of the technology sector as investors continue to look for bargains and for the next big story in the technology sector, for the simple reason that we are still in an enormously liquidity-rich environment overall. When we then think about the really quite impressive earnings that came through from Netflix yesterday, it's another one of the FANG shares that had engaged in a lengthy range which allowed the overextension relative to the trend mean to be unwound. They've come through with really impressive subscriber numbers. The obvious challenge for the company will be to hold on to those subscribers, and they do anticipate making a loss again this year. They made a $3 billion loss in free cash flow in 2019. They made a profit in 2020, and they're anticipating making a loss in 2021. Now, it's really open to how credible people find their anticipation that they'll make a profit in 2022. Competition in the sector continues to ramp higher, and the number of streaming services continues to increase. So it's very much open to question how successful they will be in holding on to all of those subscribers. And they're as dependent on global reflation and people not paying attention to their recurring expenditures as most other companies. But one thing that is certainly positive from the perspective of stock market investors is that the big mega cap companies, which have been underperforming for the last 5 or 6 months, have rebounded. And with the large caps now also participating in the rebound, as well as the small caps, well then that is really quite positive for the wider market. So the stock market at least is willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the scope for additional monetary and fiscal easing. The bond market appears to be a little bit reticent to sign up to that, primarily because I think bond investors believe that yield curve control in the USA is inevitable in much the same way as it has been in Japan, Europe, and Australia. And then gold is obviously going to benefit from that kind of scenario where money is being printed. Asset price inflation is obvious with, for example, the average house price in London now hitting £500,000 for the first time. Anyone who thinks that asset price inflation isn't taking off as a result of monetary easing, well then they just need to look at some of the news headlines. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.